Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Giant Take Podcast. My name is Josh, and I am joined by my friend and co-host, Alex. We are here with a big episode talking to Nick Filato of Big Blue View and Big Blue Banter, literally all you look in Giants land and the media coverage of the New York Giants, especially, obviously, podcasts. You're going to find his name there. We were lucky enough to talk to him again, and we've talked to him a few times now, so we've been very lucky to do that for Nick Tito, grant us this time. As you see how long the episode is, you know, he granted us a lot of time, so we appreciate him for that, and it was a really fun interview. So we'll get you to that super quickly. Just a quick intro here to start things off. Alex, there's not really much Giants news. I mean, the draft happened, the UDFA signings really happened. There haven't been any new UDFA signings. I will say one thing, though, when this episode does come out on Monday morning, May 6th, we're recording this intro Sunday night just in case anything happened, because the interview was recorded Friday afternoon. So just wanted to make sure if there was any news over the weekend, which luckily did not happen, so we should be good. That was not talked about in the interview. But besides that, Alex, how are you doing to start off?
I'm doing well, yeah. A few more weeks out, I guess, or a couple weeks out now from draft stuff. So kind of sad from that standpoint. But OTAs, are getting going soon. Training camp's just right around the corner. And we got a lot of good NBA basketball, I guess, to keep us occupied as well right now. NHL playoffs. A lot of stuff going on, I guess, in the sports world, just not in the NFL world, I guess you can say.
Yeah, I don't really know what to root for in the NHL anymore. Islanders got bounced out, but the Knicks are moving on to the second round. So that series against the Pacers, which actually starts probably tonight when you're listening, is going to be fun. We'll see what happens there. That's really all we have here. I thought of a silly, goofy thing to kind of start us off before we get going. Or maybe actually it's pretty serious. It's not silly and goofy, at least for one side of the party, and that is... For everyone listening, I don't know how big of rap fans you are, but we have some beef going around right now between probably the two biggest rappers in the rap game, maybe, debatably, number one and number two back-to-back, depending on how you see it, and I'm not going to do that here. I don't need to make any, you know, diss tracks against me, but Kendrick Lamar and Drake have been going at it. Drake has now released two diss tracks. I believe Kendrick's released four at this point. It's absolutely absurd. And so, you know, it all started apparently a long time ago, but it was the Like That verse by Kendrick Lamar First Person Shooter, which was a song with J. Cole and Drake, where J. Cole and Drake kind of talk about how it's, you know, the top three is J. Cole, Drake, and Kendrick, especially J. Cole saying that. And then in Like That, Kendrick is saying There's no big three. It's just big me. It's just me on the top of the rap game. Drake then responds with a diss track of his own. Kendrick then responds with a diss track of his own. Then he does another one. Kendrick does. Drake then responds, and then Kendrick with two in the last like 24 hours as we're recording this Sunday night, 24 to 48 hours. So Alex, I'll pose the question to you without getting too crazy into it. And then we got to throw it to the interview with Nick Filata, which is completely Giants related. Don't worry. We don't go off topic like we're doing right now. But Alex, who are you siding with right now? Kendrick Lamar or Drake?
I mean, I'm always team Drake, but I will say this. I think Kendrick Lamar, in terms of a diss, in terms of dissing, is definitely beating out Drake. His lines are definitely go a lot deeper, more personal. So I do think he's winning the beef. But I do think, like, when I listen to the songs, the Drake songs are songs that I'm still going to be listening to maybe a few weeks from now, whereas the Kendrick ones are more one and done. More because, like, I just can't listen to someone saying such terrible things about another person for that long, to be honest. But, yeah, I would say Kendrick Lamar is definitely winning, but I'll always be team Drake.
Yeah, not going to repeat the Kendrick Lamar disses on this podcast. If you want to listen to that, Kendrick has that on his, you know, platforms for you. But, yeah, pretty absurd things. I definitely agree. I think Drake is the more listenable artist. If you're, like, just chilling at any point you want to listen to music, I feel like Kendrick in general, his music is sort of heavy-hitting. Sure, he does have some, like, bops and bangers that you can listen to anytime, but I definitely think that Drake's an easier artist to listen to. I would also side with you. I think Kendrick's winning this beef, and also he's more of a likable artist by me. I like him more than I do Drake, so I would have to side opposite of you, but sounds like a normal episode of this podcast where we're choosing opposite sides.
Well, Josh, I'm going to release a diss track on you now that you said that.
Oh, are you? Yeah, what's your main diss you have going for you?
I don't know. I got to think it up. I got to contact the ghostwriters, the AI writers, see what they got for me.
Well, let's see what Alex can whip up on ChatGPT. But for right now, what I can tell you to do is to help us out on social medias by giving us that follow on The Giant Take Pod on Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook. Alex on Twitter at anorian23. I'm on Twitter at joshola29. I did all that to say go to the podcast description if you didn't hear any of that. And I do all that to say this episode is nowhere from over. We have a super fun interview talking NFL draft with Nick Filata, a Big Blue View, Big Blue Banter. You're about to hear me say that intro when I say it in a few seconds. But anyway, I'm not going to waste any more of your time. Thank you so much, and enjoy the interview with Nick Filata.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
All right, we are back now with a very special guest, host on the Big Blue Banter podcast, also Big Blue View, also a writer for Big Blue View as well. It's Nick Filata. Nick, we had you on last year in the beginning of the season in September to preview a Seahawks matchup where the Giants only scored 3 points in that game, a grand total of three. Luckily, we get you now back in to talk about hopefully a little bit more of a positive time in the Giants land here, and that is the NFL drafts where it already happened. So now we can kind of positively take a spin on maybe, you know, how these prospects are going to do. But first of all, Nick, how you doing, man? Good to see you again.
I'm doing well. Thank you, gentlemen, for inviting me back on the podcast. It's interesting. I remember that Seattle Seahawks game. That was the tush-push that went wrong on the end of the first Giants drive. John Michael Schmitz gets hurt. Daniel Bellinger gets hurt. And now the Giants only have one person who can kind of play tight end in Darren Waller. So Darren Waller was like, not even a focal point at all throughout the entire game plan. Everyone's like, this is a primetime game. Why aren't they throwing to Darren Waller? Well, it's because Daniel Bellinger got hurt and they had no tight end depth at all to block. So they had to rely on Darren Waller to block because they decided to keep Lawrence Cager on the roster as their third tight end and not keep a fourth tight end. This year, what did Joe Shane do? Brings in Jack Stoll, brings in Chris Manhertz, and then he drafts Theo Johnson. I think he understood that he made a very bad calculated error last year. And it's just funny because it really manifested in that Seattle Seahawks game. But I'm doing well. Thank you, boys.
Yeah, I mean, I remember, so that was third game of the season, now we're talking. Obviously, first game of the season, huge blowout loss against the Cowboys. Second game, huge comeback against the Cardinals. And then third game, you're kind of looking at it like, you know, we have...
San Francisco at the third game, though, Alex, I think.
Oh, San Francisco. So, yeah. So, this is the fourth game of the season we're talking right after for the Seahawks. Yeah. So, we're 1-2 at that point. I believe we had another difficult opponent right after the Seahawks. I'm trying to remember correctly.
So, we had 10 days of rest. It was a Thursday night game against the San Francisco 49ers, and then we played Monday night. But then we had a short week five, against, I think it was the Buffalo Bills, which was a Sunday night game. So it was a lot of like primetime games every week. It was just way too much exposure for a New York Giants team that was imploding on themselves.
And then that was the Bills game where it was the final play in the end zone, right? Where the PI did not get called against Darren Waller.
Yep.
I remember
before halftime, the Tyrod Taylor situation. Oh, gosh, man, it's devastating.
Yeah, now I'm remembering, because I guess if you lose the game against the Seahawks, you're just thinking you're automatically 1-4. Because you're assuming that Bill's game is going to be a loss. And then, if you win.
I'm sorry to cut you off, Al. I think Miami might have been week five, though.
No, I'm trying to think. I have terrible memory. Everyone knows this. I'm trying to figure it out now.
Yeah, I think they went down to Miami for a game because it was like traveling involved. They went down to Miami for a game, got their asses kicked. Bobby Okereke had a pick six. That was fun. The defense actually kind of showed up, kind of, but they also gave up so many yards on the ground. So it was like, are we proud of this defense? Because they're in a spot where their offense isn't doing anything. So, yeah, I think it was that. And then week six was the Buffalo Bills game.
Okay. Yeah. Now that sounds more memorable now that I'm thinking about it. Yeah. Well, I guess either way, Miami, everyone kind of thought was going to be a loss of Tyreek Hill and Tua kind of going crazy that season. I think we got killed pretty bad in that.
Yeah, but it was A-Chan who went crazy, honestly. We were kind of somewhat shutting their passing game down somewhat. But yeah, I think A-Chan went for the most amount of yards, in his whole career. It was like over 200 yards rushing, something absurd.
And then it was the third and eight, and Wink left Trey Hawkins the third on an island because Adoree Jackson had a helmet malfunction. So Adoree had to come out of the game. And poor Trey Hawkins had one-on-one assignment against Tyreek Hill. It resulted in a 60-plus-yard touchdown, and we were like, oh, God.
Yeah, I remember that now. Oh, my God.
Well, like I'm saying, hopefully better times now, right? That's what we want to talk about here. But I do want to start out with I kind of have the questions in order of how the draft went. So I'll start with first round. And obviously the expected or at least rumored trade was the Giants were going to trade up to get Drake May. Obviously they didn't end up doing that. Did you want the team to trade up for this? Is kind of like a two-part. Did you want the team to trade up for Drake May? But obviously they ended up not. So are you now content or thrilled? I don't know what your reaction is. I want to get your reaction to also now the Giants ending up picking Malik Nabers at six.
Yeah, so I wanted them to trade up to get Drake May because I think Drake May has top five quarterback potential, and there aren't many quarterbacks who come through the draft that have that type of arm talent, that type of size. If you want to look at the size, which is very important. It's not the most important attribute. It's really just the gumption to throw the football into tight windows and the arm talent to do so. Drake May had all of those traits. And it was obvious that the Giants loved him. I think Joe Shane went to like five or six of his games. He has a close relationship with Mack Brown. Remember, they drafted Josh Azudu and Marcus McKeithen out of UNC, his first draft. So you trust people in the program. And if everything checked out with Drake May as a kid, then I thought, yes, you go. You're that close. You're not planning on picking this high again. If you are, then you're probably not going to have a job. So I was all in the trade up to Drake May. I didn't want to give up the farm. I didn't want to put our asses out in the wind and give way too much because the Patriots sensed that we were desperate, but it never even came to that because the Patriots ended up drafting Drake May. Good for them. We'll see what happens. There's really not a great infrastructure in place for Drake May up in New England, but look, that option expired. Didn't end up working out for us at all. So what do you do? You adjust. And that's the whole story of the draft. And if you weren't in love with J.J. McCarthy, look, I liked J.J. McCarthy. Wasn't thrilled about him at six, but I can understand it. I don't think the arm talent is nearly as impressive as a player like Drake May. And I think he has a really good fastball. He has a lot of velocity, but he has one pitch that's really good. And he also has that gumption that I appreciate to throw tight windows over the middle of the field. But the deep arm accuracy, that's a little bit of a problem. I think he can layer the football a little bit better over the linebackers, between the safety, throws like that. So I wasn't upset that they didn't go J.J. McCarthy. I can understand it. And I'm perfectly content with selecting Malik Nabers there because I think Malik Nabers also has top five potential at his respective position in a loaded position in the NFL, too. I mean, there's a ton of excellent wide receivers around the league. So get that guy and further build the infrastructure of your own roster up. So whoever the quarterback is of the future can come in, and there will be if it is a quarterback on a rookie contract in the future, there'll be at least a foundation around him to allow that player to thrive. And then you can strike while the iron's hot throughout his rookie contract. That's the hope. And that's a little bit of a long-term thought. At this point, we're nowhere near that. I don't love the Giants quarterback situation. If anybody listens to the Big Blue Banter podcast, I think you're well aware of that at this point, but I'm not for drafting a quarterback just to draft a quarterback either, especially when the opportunity cost is missing out on a dynamic receiver that has been so elusive to the New York Giants. The Giants have been looking for a receiver since they traded Odell Beckham Jr. Kenny Golladay, swing and a miss. Kadarius Toney, swing and a miss. Darren Waller, swing and a miss. It's mind-boggling at this point, Josh, Alex. So he was sitting right there for you. Select him if you're not thrilled or don't have the true conviction with any of the quarterbacks in this draft class. So I am content with that draft selection.
I don't know if you saw this. I thought this was very interesting. Adam Schefter came out maybe a couple days after the draft and was saying the Giants, you know, they were, you know, so a lot of people are saying, oh, they were going up for Drake May. They actually wanted Joe Alt. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah, I do.
I don't know. Like, Adam Schefter, obviously very reliable in the business, but he didn't say it with a ton of conviction, to be fair with him. He didn't say, like, this is definitely what was going on. This is just what I heard kind of thing. I just, as I was going through and, like, thinking about it, you wouldn't trade up with three with the Patriots because no one's trading up that high for Joe Alt, I feel like, because there's no way they thought he was going to go before then or right after then. You would have gone tried to trade up with the Cardinals to try to jump the Chargers, which they didn't, it seems like, do. So I'm thinking that's more of a fluff piece, more just, you know, I guess rumors being spread. But what did you think about that? And say Joe Alt and Malik Nabers were there, what would you have, like, kind of thought about that situation? Would you still have gone receiver?
I still would have gone receiver, and I think that's called damage control. I think the New York Giants, I think now we realize, and Shefty was, he was open. He was like, hey, I'm not reporting it. This is just kind of what I heard. Where did he hear that from?
Yeah.
People within the Giants building, because it was wildly known at that point with the Ian Rappaport's report that the Giants were trading up to get Drake May. I think the Giants were like, well, we don't want our quarterbacks to know that we want to replace them. So let's just throw this out there as a little bit of damage control, and some people can run with it. You know, that's kind of like the way I read that situation. I don't know that for a fact, obviously, but it wouldn't make much sense if the Giants traded up to get Joe Alt all the way to three when they need a quarterback and there were quarterbacks on them. It just, does that really add up, boys?
Yeah, no.
I don't think so.
I want to get your take on day two, and I group these guys together, obviously, because they're both day two picks, and it works out because they're both in the secondary, just kind of what you see out of Tyler Newbin and Drew Phillips there for boosting that safety and cornerback position.
Yeah, so Tyler Newbin was my number one safety coming into the draft. I absolutely love safeties that can create turnovers. He leads the Golden Gophers historically in turnovers as a pretty good program. Players like Antoine Winfield Jr. came out of there. I think from a intellectual football IQ standpoint, where he's going to have to use his eye discipline and his ability to pattern match, if you want to use that term, because the Giants are going to run a lot of like cover two, cover four, shell type of defensive structures where as a safety, you're going to be reading the release of the number two wide receiver and then reacting based on what that receiver is doing. And then it kind of divulges into man coverage. But I don't think Tyler Newbin is the best at, but on the vertical plane, it's a little bit better than, you know, when he's down in the line of scrimmage. But I think you got a very smart, tough, and dependable, to use Joe Shane's motto, player to come in here and be reliable in run support, help you create turnovers, be a leader on the back end of your defense, a future face of the franchise at the back end of the defense as well. And is he the best athlete? No. Is he a liability as an athlete? I don't think so either. I just don't think he has like high-end athletic traits for a safety that's typically picked in the top 60. They tend to have those. He doesn't necessarily have that, but it's functional. I think he's a good player, and I'm glad the Giants added him. Drew Phillips has all of those athletic traits that I was just talking about. Drew Phillips has such he has a high ceiling because he has the foundational baseline athletic traits you need to be a very successful cornerback in the league. But there are some discipline and some patience issues with Drew Phillips. I think he's not good at the catch point, getting his eyes located on the football and coming down with an interception. I mean, he never had an interception in college. The one got called back where he actually did a really good job exercising those traits that I don't think are consistent throughout his film. I think he's a very willing player in run support. I love the tough-minded nature that he plays with. But he's a little bit wild, too. I think he's a little bit too fast for his own good when he's coming downhill and making hits. He's just a little bit wild, and I think he's going to be susceptible to getting juked, and it's going to be a little bit annoying. That's probably one pick that I can't say that I loved, but I understood. I understand it. Not just because you have a cornerback need, but because you want a cornerback who can play outside. You want a cornerback who can play inside. He's going to get the first initial shot on the inside. You want a cornerback who has that tough mind to, when you are nickel personnel, be a run support asset, at least want to be a run support asset. He can be a little bit more disciplined again. And you want somebody who has all the traits to play man coverage, and you'll try to coach him up with the I guess, technical issues, you could say. So overall, I thought it was an okay day. And I like I hoped that they would focus on the secondary. So they did. So overall, I would say it was okay. But I understand why people wanted offensive linemen. But I said before the draft too, boys, like the Giants put themselves in a position where they just didn't need to go and draft an offensive lineman unless they needed to, or unless they wanted to get somebody who fell from a value standpoint. Like they weren't in a position where they absolutely needed to add somebody to their offensive line room because they've signed four offensive linemen. And they had developmental pieces that I think they still remain high on. They 2 years under their belt, injury plagued years for both of the players in McKeith and Josh Zudu. You're never going to hear me complain about an offensive line selection. The Giants need to figure that out. But they also had other needs on their roster, and they got a player who at least has a high ceiling and can fill a role in nickel and not be and hopefully thrive in that role. And if not, maybe he can get kicked outside. I don't love this. I still don't really love the cornerback situation, even after they signed David Long. I'm going to be completely honest with you, because I don't know who's starting outside opposite of Deontay Banks. And if you tell me it's Cordell Flott, it's like, okay, but am I thrilled about that? No. Could it work? Absolutely. So we have to be a little bit patient as well.
Yeah. I mean, I would say, from going back to Tyler Newbin, you know, flashback, what are we talking, 4 years now, right, to Xavier McKinney pick. Obviously, vastly different players, somewhat different players, I should say. You know, there was the concerns athleticism-wise about McKinney. He turned out to be more than functional in the NFL, given his second contract, as we saw. So I'm not super concerned about that. And I think Newbin actually is much better ball hawk, coming out of college than McKinney was. And if you look at it, you know, McKinney obviously developed into a really nice ball hawk in the NFL level, and more particularly in this past season. Or the past couple of seasons, I should say. So I'm not super concerned about that. And I do think the safety position, if obviously if you have that football IQ, and if you can get ahead, kind of think ahead of what's going to happen, as long as you're in the right place at the right time, you don't necessarily need to be that elite athlete that, say, a cornerback really needs to be when they need to make up, on a mistake or whatever it may be. So I'm not super concerned about that. The Drew Phillips, I thought it was interesting because I think the Giants were very interested. My sense, based on like who they looked at, who kind of went before, I think the Giants were probably very interested in a corner in round two, say, and a name like Max Melton out of Rutgers. I think they were very interested in him. A couple others, I think Cooper DeGene. I know he's probably going to play safety, but there's a couple of guys I think that went right before. If you look from pick 40 to pick 43, that's just four corners right in a row. So if you kind of think about it, obviously they traded pick, 39, right? It would be, I believe it was, yeah, 39 that they got, that they sent to Carolina. And right after that pick, all these corners went. So I think it's kind of interesting. Probably if they're at pick 39, they're selecting one of those four guys that went right after. And of course, with the Brian Burns trade, that makes a big impact. Even though it's just eight spots back of what they were going to do, and then they end up with Drew Phillips. So I thought that was kind of an interesting, when you're looking back on the draft, kind of like what they would have done. And then you look in round three, and maybe they go in a completely different direction. Maybe they still go safety, or maybe they go offensive lineman or whatever it may be. But I really like day two, but I don't think Drew Phillips is going to make an immediate impact, is going to be my guess. And I think Newbin will. So I think, you kind of got more of a guy who's going to be plug and play right away, and then a guy who maybe will plug and play right away, but you really won't see him shine for maybe a year or two.
It's interesting, too. I think when you we can look at the archetype of Drew Phillips and Max Melton. I'm glad you brought up his name. They had both of those players in for visits. Now, Max Melton, they were able to not use a top 30 visit on him and bring him in as a local because he's a local kid and he went to Rutgers. Drew Phillips, they actually had in for top 30 visits, and both of those players are very immediate out of their breaks. They're both very quick coming downhill. They're both very explosive. I think you're going to see a lot more defensive structures where the cornerbacks on the outside are going to be playing from depth. And in order to stop quick game passing concepts, they're going to need coming downhill and playing through the catch point. So I think that's why they were looking at that type of cornerback archetype rather than the TJ Tampas of the world. And some of these corners who ended up falling, a lot of people are like, why don't they want this player? I think it's because they want those guys who are very twitched up and very springy and can get through catch points very quickly on slants and curls and quick game concepts.
I wanted to ask now, moving to day three, I guess for us, it depends on what your opinion is on it. I wanted to ask you if you had a favorite pick from this year's draft. I know for Alex and I, it's Theo Johnson, the tight end of Penn State. That's why I said day three, because that's just personal opinion. But just because of the need, as we already talked about, from what happened against that Seattle Seahawks game at the tight end position, obviously addressing that already in free agency, but also with the rumor being that, or I guess how the Giants are putting it, it's not a rumor to them. They're just expecting that Darren Waller is not going to be on the team come this season due to retirement. I think just adding to that position, having Theo Johnson there, is just, I don't know if it was a need. I think it was best player available on the board at that time in round four as well. But obviously it works out at the end of things. So I guess, do you have a favorite pick in this year's draft?
Yeah, I'm probably going to be boring and just say it's Malik Nabers, but
sure.
I'll buck that and then say it is Theo Johnson if I just kind of get rid of the Malik Nabers, you know, because I just understand the talent of Malik Nabers. I think he's going to be a great player. But Theo Johnson, I want to roll on that upside. And he's a weird profile, right? He played in Big Ten. You know, Big Ten, Penn State has recently had really good tight ends come out with Pat Freiermuth. But for some reason, he never had more than, 350 yards in a given season. And he tested like an absolute freak. And when you watch his tape, he actually has like really soft hands and like natural receiving skills that would typically be associated with a wide receiver. And you're like, why weren't you used, bro? Like, what the hell was wrong with that situation? I would say this, though, too, to one of the points you made. It wasn't a need, but at the same time, not for 2024, but there's only one other tight end under contract beyond this season. That's Daniel Bellinger. So now at least you have a second. And I like the vision of those two players. Like I like the idea of Daniel Bellinger and Theo Johnson. Like on paper, you look at that, and I think a lot of people like who don't cover the Giants and be like, yeah, whatever. Like Daniel Bellinger, who's that? Daniel Bellinger's a really good football player. He's a very good football player. Theo Johnson, he does all the dirty work, Daniel Bellinger. He'll be that like lunch pail type of guy. I'm gonna go to work, lunch pail, frickin' whatever, right? Theo Johnson, I think he has that to him, but I think there is more that we have not seen quite yet. I'm wondering how this tight end room is going to shake out, though, too. Like, say Darren Waller does retire. There's five guys there. Like, I think Lawrence Cager is probably going to be the odd man out. Like, I would hope at this point. I don't mean that I don't want to besmirch the man. I just don't think his skill set fit with the New York Giants. I think they wanted an athletic tight end. Like, that's what the Giants wanted. They showed that with Lawrence Cager and keeping Lawrence Cager with Darren Waller. And I think it was a huge mistake that they made last year, as I said at the top of the show. But now with Manhurst, Stoll, Theo Johnson, Daniel Bellinger, are they going to keep four? And if they do, all four of those guys, are that similar? I think like it might be a camp battle between Manhurst and Stoll at this point, where only one of those guys is going to end up making the roster. But I'd rather be in that situation right now as a New York Giants fan, because we know injuries happen. Last year, we had Tommy Sweeney in camp, and Tommy Sweeney ended up suffering some sort of ailment, and he couldn't play. And that could have changed the fortune of what the New York Giants wanted, though, too, right? Like if Tommy Sweeney would have made this team, he would have been a much more functional blocker than Lawrence Cager and possibly even Darren Waller. So, I'm excited to see how the tight end position shakes out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm thinking of Johnson, though, to go back to your question.
No, and Alex and I talked about this in our draft recap as well. Like another reason of the Johnson pick, too, is we don't know how the offense is going to look because we had Saquon Barkley and we were looking at run blocking tight ends that were going to run blocking because our whole offense was surrounded around Saquon Barkley and how he could run the ball and facilitate the offense, where now we're more reliant on Daniel Jones. And even you even look at the running back position of Devin Singletary as our starting running back. He's even more used as a pass catcher than probably Saquon Barkley looks to be, or at least multifaceted in the way that he might even like split 50-50 of how many carries he's going to have per game with how many receptions he could have. Like it could be like that, just the way he was used at Buffalo and Texas, right? I think is also where he played too. I think just Yeah, so I think just now with Bellinger and with now bringing in Johnson, it's just going to be interesting because I don't know how many times they're going to be on the field at the same time, both running routes, one of them blocking, one of them not. I just think it's interesting. I don't know how Kaffa is going to kind of shape this offense now with, you know, us being more of, I would assume, a passing offense with Saquon Barkley gone.
Yeah, I would imagine we'd probably pass the football more. A lot of it's going to come down to how the defense matches our personnel and if we can exploit their personnel. A lot of it is that. It's in-game adjustments and watching film based on your opponent and what your opponent does defensively and then try to take advantage of what your opponent does. If the Giants are checking the football down to Devin Singletary a lot, that's not really a good thing. Like, we don't want our running backs getting 90 receptions. Like, that's like 2018 Eli type of stuff with Saquon Barkley. With Malik Nabers on the team now, with Jalin Hyatt in his second year, I want to see some verticality out of the offense. But the impetus to verticality is the quarterback position. And that's the one thing that I'm not sold on yet with this roster. Can Drew Locke be that guy? I don't know. Based off the film that I have seen, I'm dovetailing into a totally different topic right now. Sorry about that. I do this sometimes. But
all good.
Yeah. Daniel, like, I think Daniel Jones is a better quarterback than Drew Locke, but I have to add the caveat that we haven't really seen a lot of Drew Locke. We saw three games of him in the last 2 years with Seattle. One of them, he didn't get any practice with the first team because Geno Smith ended up getting injured right before the game and he was thrust into it. That means something, right? So is it plausible or is it at least possible that Drew Locke ends up being a better option than Daniel Jones? Yeah, I think that's a possibility. Right now, I would say Daniel Jones, but then you got to factor in the contract situation. You're like, oh my God, if this guy gets hurt, he can't pass a physical. We're on the hook for how much money? Oh, geez. So there's a lot that was a Morty Smith right there. Oh, geez. But yeah, no, that was, I don't know, man. I think it's going to be something very fun to cover over the training camp. There's going to be a lot of, I'm sure Twitter will be a very safe place for, of course, it always is, baby.
Well, I'd say like Daniel Jones. I mean, I guess we're getting off the draft area now, but we'll come back to it in a second. You know, Daniel Jones, I know in those first, let's say, 4 or 5 years, I guess it was 4 years of his career, elite in terms statistically, deep ball, you know, passer. You know, I don't know how accurate that is, I don't know what measures they're using. But everywhere you saw PFF, whatever it may be, Daniel Jones, he doesn't do a lot of them. But when he does throw deep, he's accurate. So is it more, do you think, about kind of letting the leash go and telling Daniel Jones that he really needs to be more aggressive? Because I think that's kind of the issue. I think there's fear. And I think that's part of the issue. He's been coached down to not turn the ball over so much that he's so afraid of it that he won't even take any minute risk. And do you think if that can kind of go away a little bit, some of these guys who are really huge vertical threats, even Darius Slayton, Jalin Hyatt, obviously Malik Nabers now, do you think those guys can get more involved in this offense, can get more explosive? Because do you think Daniel Jones has it in him is basically what I'm trying to ask.
Yeah, I think he's reluctant. So I think if you buck the reluctance, then yeah, more explosive plays should come from you. I think he has a functional arm. His arm is fine. It's not huge. I wouldn't say he has the best arm talent, but I think you can be a starting quarterback in the league with Daniel Jones's arm talent and be like a functional and like a solid starting quarterback in the league. For me, it's more seeing, it's more anticipating seeing the throws the receivers come open before they actually come open and then pulling the trigger on that when it happens. It's not that he hasn't ever done it before. It's that he doesn't do it nearly as consistently as he should. The windows in the NFL are so small. The opportunities are so few. You need to strike when they present themselves. And there are way too many times on tape where Daniel Jones is just not striking when he could. I understand like all the excuses about Daniel Jones. Like I get them. Like they're not unwarranted. The offensive line has sucked. Jason Garrett was not great for Daniel Jones. They have not given him a lot of receivers. All of those things are true, but that doesn't change the fact that there are plenty, like there are tons of situations on tape where Daniel Jones isn't maximizing the offense and isn't seizing upon the opportunities that are at his feet when he does have clean pockets. And I think if you want to consistently compete and consistently win in this league as a quarterback, you need to have a quarterback who will do those things. And I just, through 5, 6 years, whatever it's been with Daniel Jones, he has not proven that at all. And that's my issue with him. And that's separate from the fact that, yeah, the Giants have not done the kid too well, right? The Giants have not. Like, that's obvious too, right? Throughout the last, geez, since 2019, it's been shit roller coaster for the Giants.
Alex, we'll get back to that and Daniel Jones in a second. Just kind of wrapping up the draft now, going outside the draft to the UDFA signings. As every team does, the Giants made a good amount of those. Is there any that stood out to you that they made that maybe can make a chance during training camp or anything like that, or just they were just names?
Yeah, they're just names right now. I still got more film work to do. I just wrapped up some of my videos on when these guys get selected, if I didn't have a lot of film cut on them prior to the draft, I had to cut all that film to watch all that film. So it takes quite a while. We're only a week away out from the draft. So I've seen some of the UDFA names. I still need to get some work done on them. I'll probably have that done in like a week or so.
Yeah, I just the only thing that stood out was that they finally actually looked in the 2024 draft, even though it was UDFAs, at the offensive line position, because that's something that wasn't addressed at all during the draft. Was that something that also stood out to you when you kind of looked at this draft class? Like, wow, there's no offensive lineman that got selected?
I mean, yeah, it's something that stands out, but I understand they only had six picks, and they, like I said at the top of the show, they put their roster in a position where you didn't have to force a draft pick. So only if you love a draftee, then you select him. So I think that's the way they tackled it. And I think they liked the players that they ended up getting. Those were all positions that they theoretically needed. They're all, I would say, solid assets on the roster. Overall, I think I gave this class like a B plus, right? Like, I don't think it's the best draft class. I think it's solid, though. Would I have liked an offensive lineman? Sure. I mean, I think they like the fact that they brought in Aaron Stinney. I think they like the fact that they're starting five right now. Like, if we go through the starting five optimally, it's what? Andrew Thomas, Evan Neal at tackle, JMS, John Runyon, Jermaine Illuminor. Then that leaves Aaron Stinney, Josh Azudu as like swing interior offensive lineman, and you can have the flexibility of putting Illuminor also as your swing tackle if something were to happen to Thomas or Neal, meaning Azudu or Stinney would slide into the Illuminor spot, the starting guard. And that already is such a better situation than the New York Giants have been in recent memory along the offensive line. And I don't know what the Giants feel about like McKeithens of the world and players like that. And I think both McKeithen and Azudu, I get why Giant fans are done with them, but they both have had just terrible luck since coming into the NFL. Like, McKeithen tore his ACL before his rookie season. Like, that sucks, man. And he has to battle back at, what, like 350 pounds? Yeah, that's a tough thing to do, right? And then he has to start against the San Francisco 49ers in week three. Like, that's shit. That's a crappy situation. Azudu gets hurt in his rookie season, flashes in his rookie season, gets hurt in his rookie season, and then the Giants say, you know what, he could be a swing tackle. He has that flexibility. And then, of course, Andrew Thomas gets hurt, and this poor bastard has to go and kick out the left tackle and start playing like Micah Parsons and stuff. Like, it's just like terrible circumstances where the Giants took these calculated risks, and every calculated risk blew up in their face. My point is, I'm not willing to just say, yeah, Josh Azudu, let's cut him. Marcus McKeithen, I get he's like a day three guy, but still, like, this is like the last offensive lineman on your roster. I think you could do much worse. Actually, I know you could do much worse than that, because the Giants have done much worse than that in recent memory.
Yeah, and I'd say, like, you know, you look at that offensive line, obviously, and, you know, there's talent enough that a solid offensive line coach and a solid offensive line culture, you know, that it could be an average offensive line in this league. I mean, Andrew Thomas is a top five offensive lineman in the NFL. Top three tackle, maybe top five tackle. I don't know, depending on where you say it.
But either way,
one of the elite tackles in the NFL who's instantly boosting your offensive line. You know, JMS is only going to get better, hopefully. Those guards are starting caliber guards. And Evan Neal, obviously, we have to wait and see what's going to happen with him. He's the big X factor of the O-line. But there was no necessary need to definitely draft someone to start, per se. But you know, obviously it would have been nice to see some depth pieces, but what I did find interesting with the UDFAs is that the two tackles they did bring in did have the highest guarantees, almost around $300,000. I know it's minuscule compared to what we're talking about with some of these non-UDFAs and just free agent signings, of course, but I did think it was interesting. Obviously they can cut them very easily, wouldn't be a big dent, but I did find it kind of fascinating that they brought in those guys and emphasized bringing in those tackles. Obviously, swing tackle somewhat still of a need, so I guess I do understand it from that.
So that's Jake Kubis and Marcellus Johnson, the Missouri and North Dakota State's kids.
Yeah, Missouri and North. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, Sweet. I'm going to get my hands on some North Dakota State film. North Dakota State's a fun college to watch. And I've watched way too much of it recently. Like over the last 5 or 6 years.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, North Dakota State. Well, they had someone else. I'm trying to think.
No, they got Carson Wentz. They had Trey Lance. Yeah. They had Easton Stick.
Yeah. Okay.
They had Christian Watson. So it's like a lot of guys coming out of the draft where I'm like, okay, let's go to the FCS, baby.
Yeah. I mean, I guess just to wrap it up, we have the draft. We have the UDFAs brought in Long. I don't know where he really fits in the corner department. But you look at this roster right now, where do you think, you know, maybe just right now in terms of adding a few more free agents, maybe a little bit longer term outlook, where do you think the Giants really go from here with this roster?
So are you talking about from a personnel standpoint or from a success on the football field standpoint? Or both?
Both, yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so I think they need to explore interior defensive linemen still, maybe getting a lighter, like 290, 300-pound, quicker type of interior defensive lineman to shoot gaps and penetrate, which something Chain Bowen is going to be doing. I'm not done looking at the cornerback position if you fall in love with somebody. And a lot of this might not happen right now. Like, I think you're going to have a flurry of signings because it's after the draft. This doesn't count against compensatory formula. So you have a flurry of signings similar to what happened with David Long. But after training camp, that's where you see a lot of the guys who didn't make the cut for the final 53. A lot of teams scoop in and get those guys. So we might see some of that then. Not done looking at the offensive line. You know, not done there quite yet. Running back is something you can entertain. I mean, I think you probably satiated your need with the Tyrone Tracy Jr. pick, but this is a different world than Giant fans are used to. We're so used to having Saquon take like 80% of the carries, and it's like, oh yeah, well, who's behind him? Who's behind that guy? It's not going to be that way right now. You have Devin Singletary, who will take probably like half, right? But you need another competent guy behind him, and if that's not Tyrone Tracy Jr., then is it Eric Gray? That camp battle is going to be a lot of fun. But I think IDL and then secondary is probably the two places that really stick out. I'm trying to think if there's another one. But how is it this roster going to translate to wins? Look, the NFC is not that great. You're playing the AFC North, which sucks. That could easily be what, 4 losses. And then you're playing the NFC South, which is good. Carolina, the Saints, Tampa Bay. Those teams, they're not all shitty, right? But they're not all great. Like, the Giants can win some of those games, and hopefully the Giants can actually start winning divisional games, which is something they just can't do, right?
Yeah, that'd be crazy.
I'd be crazy if it's not Washington.
That'd be crazy. You
know, we did beat Philadelphia at the end of the season last year. So if you could steal a couple divisional games, and I know this is premature, but if you could steal a couple divisional games, if you can win one of those AFC North games, which isn't the craziest thing in the world, and if you can win 2 or 3 of those South games, you're talking about, you know, this could be like a 8-9 win team, which seems crazy, but the NFC is not that great. And I want to say the one-off teams that they do play aren't good. The Giants were not good this year, so they're playing the bottom team of the AFC. No, the Washington would be. So we're playing the second team of the NFC West and the NFC North, so whoever that is. And I think the other AFC team we play is also a team that's just like, oh, man, the Giants should roll that team. Or the Giants are at least I shouldn't say roll. That's way too confident. But the Giants could beat this team. So I wouldn't be shocked if the Giants win more games than we expect. Like 8. That's not the craziest thing to me. And I wouldn't think that that would be possible. But the problem is I just think there's such a low ceiling on this team. Because what are you going to do if you do get to the playoffs again? If you do. If you win 7 or 8 games, I'm not sure if that's going to get you in, right? Especially if you're losing these divisional games. But if you do, do you have the quarterback position to actually overcome? I'm not certain. So I still think there are significant issues that need to be ironed out. But the reality of the NFC being pretty weak, I think the Giants could at least compete for one of the last wild card spots.
Yeah. The ceiling, the ceiling's just as high as it was 2 years ago, is what I would say. That's pretty much. I don't think they can do it.
But 2 years ago, I don't like using luck, but you know, there's luck in football. You get fortunate sometimes. Giants benefited from a lot of fortune in 2022. We knew it at the time, right? Like even in week one, Randy Bullock misses this easy field goal. It's like, ah, that's awesome. That never happens to us. Yes, that's great.
And Brian Daboll looks like a genius for going for 2. Obviously, if he loses that game, they go for 2 or whatever.
Yeah.
He still looks bad. But
it's a good, this is the way we're going to set the culture of the New York Giants under my
best decision. But
it's a great decision. And then the Giants, man, they won a lot of early games in 2022, you know, like just like crazy instances like Xavier McKinney stripping Travis Etienne of the football right before he gets into the end. The Giants win against the Jags if that doesn't happen. The punt return fumble by Carolina in week two. Do the Giants win that game if they their dude doesn't just fumble the punt? Like, a lot of little things like that the Giants benefited from. You could do that with every team, though, and I'm not saying, oh, the Giants suck, but, you know, good teams typically have good fortune, it seems like, and then maybe the Giants, they were well-coached, they were well-prepared in 2022, but holy crap, in 2023, did that just flip on its ass, bro? Like, that was just insane. Everything went wrong. Everything. Everything the Giants tried went wrong last season.
Yeah. We're recording this this interview on Friday afternoon, the day after the Knicks defeated the 76ers, and I saw a tweet this morning saying, it was from Will on Giants Twitter that I'm sure everyone knows pretty well listening. Tonight, for the first time in his professional career, Saquon Barkley experienced a meaningful New York win against a divisional rival. Because he was sitting with A.J. Brown courtside watching that.
Yeah, did you see his tweet? Saquon tweeted and he was like, I don't know, like, you guys been 2 months, like, give up on it. I don't think he understands. He's going to be booed for the rest of his life. Like, find fans. Like,
yeah.
I get it, but, like, I somewhat feel bad, but he will be booed by New York Giants fans till the day.
Hey, he'll be fine.
Playing.
He'll be fine. Hey, I'm always pro player, so you go and get your bag, Saquon. I'm glad you did what's best for you and your family. Absolutely. But that doesn't mean Giant fans can't boo you when they see you at a 76ers game. That can happen. Yeah. Just don't be a dick. You know what I mean?
Exactly. No, I agree.
Stop whining and complaining about it, I think, would be.
We'll have to see when we play him 2 times this year, unfortunately. Or fortunately, depending on how the games go. But Nick, we thank you so much for joining us. Big Blue Banter, Big Blue View, at Nick Filato on Twitter. For everyone listening, for everyone watching, it's right there for you on the screen. Nick, we thank you so much for joining us, and can't wait to talk to you, hopefully, when we preview a game that we don't only score 3 points in, I would hope.
Josh, Alex, thank you so much for having me. Circle back during the season, and we'll definitely preview a game.